Well, good morning, or good afternoon, or good evening. Muy buenos dias, buenas tardes, buenas noches, bienvenidos. Welcome. Welcome to Business 121 Financial Planning and Money Management. We are so happy and proud and honored and privileged that you are here with us. And we're also happy that you're able to listen to this and maybe even be watching it too, because that means you've overcome any technological barriers that are preventing you from seeing and listening to our presentations. But as I say in the other introduction parts of our class, if you're having technological problems, call a teenager, because they can fix anything. They've grown up with this stuff. My name is Frank Pagliano, and I introduce myself in other locations at the beginning of the semester, but I am your instructor for the class. And again, I am incredibly privileged and honored to have this position. I'm the luckiest guy in the world because I get to teach what I love and what I do. And as you'll learn about in the introduction, I work quite a bit in the world of finance, stocks, bonds, insurance, real estate. So you've come to the right place. You are here in financial planning and money management. Welcome, everyone. This course spans the entire spectrum of personal financial planning experiences. So if you have any qualms about your personal financial planning, you're in the right place. So let's get started. Slide number 2. We start with a perspective. It is a gloomy moment in history. Never has the future seemed so dark and incalculable. The United States is beset with racial, industrial, and commercial chaos drifting we know not where. Of our troubles, no one can see the end. Yeah. Did you see this on Skunk News last night? I'm sorry, Weasel News. Badger News, you know, with shrill O'Reilly and Sean Hattery talking about how Donald Trump is going to make America white again. I'm sorry, hate again. Great, I am sorry, great again. Yeah, right. If you, I'm sorry, Fox News, yeah, Fox, if you haven't figured that one out. Yeah, stick with me here, folks. If you ask people when this was said, when this was written, often they will say Great Depression, World War II, maybe 9/11. Well, you know what? They're a little bit off because it was written in 1847 in Harper's Magazine, which was at the time a very influential magazine throughout the country. Did they have serious issues in the 1840s? Yeah. The Industrial Revolution was starting to take hold and lives were changing at a rapid pace. And at the same time, the peculiar institution, isn't that a great name? Don't call it slavery. Call it the peculiar institution, was still raging throughout the southern part of the country, and the country was about to tear itself apart. So they had serious issues in the 1840s. Do we have serious issues now? Yes, of course we do. We have... as some might say, intractable, which is a fancy way of saying you can't fix them, problems going forward. But the truth is, folks, so far, equating serious with fatal has not been correct. And even with all the horrible things that happen from time to time, every day, if you listen to the news, or watch, the last 200 years have been the most successful, prosperous years in the history of our civilization, history of our recorded history. The last 20 years have been the most prosperous years ever. More people as a percentage of the world's population have come out of poverty than ever before. And the next 20, 30, 40 years should be even better. I know you, yeah, you're not used to this kind of optimism when you watch the news, are you? No, things are looking good, even with all the terrible, horrible, no good, very bad things that happen all the time. We're actually doing pretty good. Yeah, but that doesn't mean there are serious problems, and who knows, we could blow ourselves up, die in our own ways, drown in our sorrow, tsunami, earthquake, meteorite, Ebola, disco could return. That's, you don't believe me, but you didn't live through the 1970s. That was a serious time. But it turns out, dear students, that being pessimistic is not only that great for your health, it's also not good for your finances. Optimistic people live longer. They report better, according to the sociologists and psychologists, better levels of happiness and contentment. And they're better financially. They're better off financially the more optimistic you are. Now, it's not a guarantee, but that's the history. And we'll see. You know, come back in 20 years. We'll see if Piano was correct. I might not be around anymore, but I hope to be. And I'm excited, because the future looks pretty darn bright if we can keep from blowing ourselves up, dying in our own ways, et cetera, et cetera. So let's get started with Chapter 1, Personal Financial Planning in Action. So our first chapter is dedicated to planning, the beginning the planning process. And we start with an old Russian proverb. It is not money that brings happiness. It is lots of money. Is that true? Well, we'll take a look at that later on. It turns out, according to the sociologist, the psychologist, that no, it's not really that true. But we'll continue, and we hope that all of you, assuming you have enough time and plan correctly, will become very wealthy indeed, and that you will have a level of contentment and happiness that is certainly better off than most people who watch Fox News. Slide number, I can't help it, I apologize. Remember, don't worry, we'll insult everybody by the end of this semester, don't worry. Slide number 4, financial planning, a definition. Because this is college, right, and we have to have a definition that you're going to be tested on. So if you see anything in italics, such as personal financial planning here, then it's going to be on the test. Okay, I apologize. Personal financial planning is the process of managing your money to achieve personal economic satisfaction. What an interesting definition. Are you satisfied? Yeah, let's get the Stones in here, Rolling Stones. You can't get no satisfaction. This is our book's definition. So it's not a particularly great definition, because it turns out it's not easy to define personal financial planning. Here's another definition. The ability to use knowledge and skills to manage one's financial resources effectively for lifetime financial security. So instead of satisfaction, they say security. And I kind of like that. I like that idea of having a secure financial future. Another one. The process of realizing more enjoyment from income and improving one's standard of living while making adequate arrangements for a secure and comfortable retirement. Not bad. And then this last one, the process of identifying assets, determining the classification of those assets in regard to both current and future needs, analyzing debt, expenses, and consumption patterns, reviewing tax status, and addressing a host of other issues and concerns. I think that's way too wordy, but that comes from the life insurance industry. So these are definitions I've gone out and found, because, as I said, it's not that easy. How would you define personal financial planning? Which one of these key terms, satisfaction, security, comfort, which one of these would speak to you? So you come up with your own personal financial planning definition, but realize we're going to use the one that's from the book. Slide number 5. What are the benefits? Well, it turns out that there are several advantages of effective personal financial planning. There's increased effectiveness in obtaining, using, and protecting your financial resources, increased control of your financial affairs, and a sense of freedom from financial worries obtained by being able to look optimistically toward the future. When you talk to people who are in serious financial trouble, they will often say that the future does not look bright for them. They have a hard time sleeping at night. Indeed. So we're going to hope, we're going to do our best to give you the tools, the tricks, the tips that will prevent you from staying up at night and hopefully let you sleep well during the... But that's another issue. There, you know, could be other issues that keep you awake, so I can't guarantee anything. And then my favorite, and of course that's why it's italics, improved personal relationship. Because what is the number one reason for divorce in the United States of America? The numbers say that it's finances. Although there are others, but the money. You would have thought the highest one would be hanky panky, especially now with Farcebook and Titter, and you can find out what your spouse is up to. No, but it's money. So we're going to do our best to help you have a long and, well, happy, that's a different issue, but a long-lasting relationship. By not having problems with money. You have to deal with the other ones. Slide number 6. We're going to develop a flexible financial plan. And again, it's a book, it's college, so we have to have a formal definition. A financial plan is a formalized report that summarizes your current financial situation, analyzes your financial needs, and recommends future financial activities. Where are you? Where do you need to be? And what are you going to do to get there? Your financial plan can be created by you. We're going to do that together throughout the semester. Done with the assistance from a financial planner or made using any one of many money management software packages such as Quicken. Again, this is college, so on slide number 7, we have a formal financial planning process. Number 1, determine your current financial situation. Number 2, develop your financial goals. Number 3, identify alternative courses of action. Number 4, evaluate your alternatives, always keeping in mind the opportunity costs and the risks. What are opportunity costs? We'll discuss that in a bit, but they're not easily understood. Number 5, create and implement a financial action plan and write it down. Because if it's not written down, it is simply a dream, which is not bad, folks. That's important to dream, but we need to put it on pencil and paper or a computer. And then number 6, reevaluate and revise your plan. You know, folks, does anybody really do all these things? Is there anybody out there who is following this 6-step financial planning process? Yeah, there's a few people out there, you know. But they're not much fun at parties, folks. These people, you know, everybody else is skinny dipping out by the pool, having a good old time, and these people are upstairs in their bedroom reevaluating and revising their financial plan. A lot of them are accountants. Okay. I'm sorry. Who did we insult? Remember, I told you, don't worry. We're going to insult everybody by the end of the semester. Don't worry. We're going to insult everybody by the end of this class. Slide number 8. Here is a more realistic and typical financial planning process, folks. Here's more realistic, more typical, and we, number 1, make money, and then number 2, spend it. And then number 3, go make some more money, and number 4, spend that, and then spend some more. Wait a minute. How do you spend money you don't have? Number 5, go into debt. No. Number 6, panic. Number 7, take Business 121, financial planning and money management. What a great financial planning process. Lots of anybody's have done this, folks. Can you relate? Yes. Well, we're going to do our best to break this cycle of make money, spend it, spend a little more, go into debt, panic? Yes. Simply put, on slide number 9, folks, it all comes down to the choices that we make. We, as lucky members of the great American economic machine, have choices that 100 years ago people couldn't even begin to imagine. And so some of the choices are very mundane and not that important, but others are extremely important and have serious consequences, either good or bad, over the long term. And what we need to keep in mind are the opportunity costs. The opportunity costs? What is this? Have you taken economics? In economics, you're going to learn a lot about opportunity costs. Here, we're going to refer to it over and over again, and by the end of the semester, by the end of our class, I sure hope you understand this, especially when we get to investments. The opportunity cost is sometimes called the trade-off. It is what you give up by making a choice. Just because you've made one choice means all these other choices that would have been available to you are no longer available to you. You cannot always measure it in dollars. Sometimes it's your time or your health. And so when you make a decision, the idea we want to instill into you is that you will consider the lost opportunities that will invariably result from your decisions. And we're going to see examples of this when we do exercises. Do you really need to go to $4. Starbucks every day. Do you need to do that? And if you do that, what are you giving up? Do you need to smoke those little white tubes of tobacco that are actually pretty darn expensive? Do you need to go out every weekend or twice a week? Or 3 times a week, yeah. And the economists love to give this discussion. There is no such thing as a free lunch. And we could talk about that a long time, and they do. If you take economics, they'll discuss that along with things such as how many angels can fit on the head of a pin. In the meantime, we've got personal financial planning to do. What are the opportunity costs of attending college? What could you be doing right now instead of listening to some crazy guy burble on about personal financial planning? Huh? What could you be doing? Could be at the beach. Hopefully you're at the beach listening to this. You could be sleeping, relaxing. You could be working. You could be making money. So why? Why are you taking this? Why did you make this choice? Well, hopefully the answer will be something along the line, well, I hope to better myself so that I will make good choices and learn the techniques and tips that will lead to long-term financial accumulation of wealth and security and satisfaction. Or maybe it's just because it's a required course or my mom told me to take it. But that's something to think about, right? What could you be doing right now instead of listening to this, watching this? And is it more important? Slide number 10 is an attempt, and this is taken from our book and another book, which was written in 1980, so the numbers are all wrong, but it's called Your Money or Your Life. And there are a few books by that name, so you have to be careful. Check the authors. But their basic theme of this book is, look, you're only here for a certain amount of time. That's it. You're here for a certain amount of time, and you get on this dirt. And during that time, you're going to trade your money, you're going to trade your life, I'm sorry, for your money. In other words, the wheel, the hamster wheel that we get on to generate the money to buy the things that we believe we're told we need, and some of which we do, right? What are the 3 things you need, folks? Food, clothing, and shelter. Oh, yeah, and internet access. Oh, and I have to have, right, the trip to Cancun. Anyway, so here we are, folks. We take our personal opportunity cost, the time, the effort, the health, and the financial opportunity cost, which we'll discuss later on when we get to investments, interest, liquidity, what's that, safety. And we put them versus the acquisitions that, as we said, some of us believe we have to have, and some we do have to have because you don't eat, you get sick. It's that simple. And so these people, I think the one author has passed away, sadly, but they've created a culture. And check it out if you're so inclined, called Simple Living. And the simpleliving.net is a discussion forum where people get together who say, look, you know, I don't want to be stuck on that hamster wheel. I don't want to believe that I need to buy all these things that I thought I needed to buy because the television told me I needed to buy them. And so check it out. See if you harmonize with them. Some of them go to extremes, which we'll discuss later on. Slide number 11. Because every financial decision involves evaluating the risk involved. And we'll discuss these risks as we go through this semester, go through the class. Inflation risk, lost buying power, interest rate risk, the cost of borrowing, and the rate of return. Income risk, the loss of a job, you know. Then you got to go out and find a new job. You can get insurance against that, yeah. But personal risk, health and safety. We need, you know, health insurance and fire insurance. And liquidity risk. What? Liquidity? What is that? Oh, yeah, not having enough beer or wine for the week. No. The ability to sell your investment at a reasonable price. And we'll discuss all these later on. And these are all from the book. And I added one called The Culture of Consumerism Risk, which you'll never find anywhere else but in this class. Die working and in debt up to your eyeballs risk. You see people say things like, well, I want to live my life now. I'm going to enjoy myself now. I'm not going to think about the future. Anyway, can you guard against all risks? The answer is yes. There is an insurance company out there somewhere that's going to guard you against all these different risks. But you wind up spending all your money for insurance. So, hey, you shouldn't try. We will learn together this class, which risks are the most important to guard against. So, where are we going here? Slide number 12. Developing good financial habits. We're going to use a well-conceived spending plan to help you stay within your income while allowing you to save and invest for the future. Learn about the appropriate insurance protection to prevent the financial disasters, and then we'll spend some time becoming informed about tax and investment alternatives. Achieving your financial objectives requires a willingness to learn and the appropriate information sources, and there are manifold. Do you like that word, manifold? It means a lot. There are many, many places, folks. It's become an entire series of industries. Printed materials, books, magazines, financial institutions, credit unions, banks, brokerage firms, insurance companies, school courses, educational seminars, software and online and information sources, because the infernal net is an inexhaustible supply of sometimes useful, sometimes not so useful information, and then financial specialists, planners who will take your money. Help you plan. Yeah. Taking this course is a great start. And we discussed that financial plan. There are people, financial planners, and you'll hear people say, you should only go with a financial planner. Well, it turns out that they're great for people who already have a whole lot of money, folks. But they're going to want to charge you $600, $1,200, $1,500 to do something that you're going to learn how to do in this class, you know, for whatever it costs you to take the class, which wasn't that expensive. And some of you might not even be enrolled in this class and are listening to this on the infernal. I get emails from people who just, I don't know how they do it, but they find the class and they start taking the class and they send me emails saying, thank you very much for doing this for free. Well, I didn't do it for free. It's the internet. It makes it easy. I don't have to. You just put it up there, and anybody can look at it around the world. What a great technology. Who would have thought we would have had that 40 years ago? Not me. Anyway, slide number 14. What are some of the influences on personal financial planning? Life situation and financial values. Who are you? What is your marital status, your household size, your employment? What major events have occurred in your life? Marriage, birth, or adoption of a child, divorce, one of the worst things that can happen to you financially. Bankruptcy, one of the other worst things that can happen to you financially. Values, what are the ideas and principles you consider correct, desirable, and important? And then, again, this is college, and we have a textbook that, instead of just saying how old you are, they say, where are you in the adult life cycle stage? Are you in the traditionalist mature generation, sometimes called the greatest generation? Folks, we have people alive today who remember World War II and the Great Depression, and they long since gave up trying to warn us that dark days can come and do come because the boomers are in charge, and I'm one of them. We're giving way now, thankfully. It's about time. But no, we're still in charge. And notice we're one of the largest generations. And what's the difference? Well, the traditionalists, the matures, they are very loyal. Their institutions got them through the Great Depression, got them through World War II. So in the 1950s and 60s, there was this tremendous need to conform and need to accept the government regulation and indoctrination. And what did we boomers do? You lied to us. 54,000 of us died in Vietnam based on lies. There was no attack on the United States Navy by the North Vietnamese. It was just some ideological whim that we thought that would save this very corrupt country from another corrupt country, and we got involved and we were lied to. So that's why the 1960s were such a turbulent time, because many forces came together to say, look, we're not going to accept the status quo anymore. We're not going to accept it. There's no more draft. 18-year-olds now can vote. They couldn't vote then. They could die. They could go to war and die, but they couldn't vote. The civil rights movement, the women's rights movement, the gay rights movement, the homosexual. My mother had a problem with that one. Why can't they just be quiet? So we boomers, we don't trust you. Whereas the traditionalists are very trusting, the boomers, not so much. And then the Gen Xers, oh, pity the Gen Xers. Notice that they're the smallest generation, instead of the traditionalists, but they're going away now. But the Gen Xers, yeah, yeah, they were the first generation to be latchkey children, because the boomers, we had daddy went to work and fondled the secretary and mommy stayed home and beat the children and took Valium. But not the Gen Xers, because now mommy and daddy both go to work. And the exactly. So, what were the major events in their coming of age? AIDS, right? Yes, amazingly, we boomers, we didn't have to worry. That's why sex and drugs and rock and roll and free love, and all of a sudden, no, it's not so free, is it? And what else? The coming of the internet age was part of the Gen Xers, and they really got kicked around, folks. It's sometimes called the baby bust. You don't hear that too often, but yes, they're smaller than they're sandwiched between the boomers and the millennials, and they were at the peak time for buying a home, just as home prices skyrocketed and then subsequently burst. So they really got kicked in the teeth. Now the millennials, they're the ones that excite me the most. Because sometimes called the digital generation, Gen Y. These are people born between 1981 and 2000. What are the... Right, of course. They grew up with the internet. They don't know anything else. They grew up with technology. And so these are the people that I'm really excited about. Usually older generations look at the younger generation, younger, they don't know what they're doing. They weren't like we were. That's right. Thank goodness they weren't like we are. They have no preconceived notions. Everything is open to them. They have tools that we could only dream of. And they, you know, we boomers, would we have listened to our parents' music? Are you out of your mind? I know you're going to have a hard time believing this, but a popular saying in the 1960s among the boomers was, never trust anybody over 30. You don't believe me. It's the truth. And yet, you see millennials walking around with Leonard Skinner t-shirts. or the Beatles, or the Stones, or Mary, you know, Rosemary Clooney, or Frank Sinatra. And we would never have listened to our parents' music. And yet, I went up to a millennial once, a young chiquita on Southwestern College, young Latina woman on Southwestern College campus who was wearing a Leonard Skinner t-shirt. And I said, do you really listen to Leonard Skinner? And she said, oh, yeah, they rock. And I said, you're right. And I started singing, Gimme Three Steps, Gimme Three Steps, Mister, as I walked away, and she laughed. So your generation, if you're a millennial, you are going to change the world in ways that we can only dream of now, but look forward to. And some things are going to be bad, and, you know, farce book is good in some respects, and it's not so good in other respects. But we're going to cure cancer. We're going to have driverless cars. We're going to have universal translating devices. So all the language professors, they're going to be out of a job. Along with the taxistas, along with the taxi drivers and all the chemotherapy sellers. So the world is going to change in ways that we cannot even imagine. And this next generation coming up, who knows? Even they don't have a name yet. Some people call them Gen Z, but I think that's lame. But you watch a 2 or 3 year old pick up a tablet and just spin around and do things that you still are. I still have a hard time doing that pinch and whatever it's called, pinch and zoom. So I'm excited. I'm excited about the future. And I think, you know, assuming we don't die in our own ways, blow ourselves up, et cetera, et cetera, we've got some serious, serious coolness coming down the pike, some serious, wonderful changes for hopefully as many people as possible can share in that. Because here is a t-shirt I saw a few years ago on an SDS student, and I said, that's it, that's the millennials, right there they are. Here it is, folks, good, you know, man and a woman, better, you guys, right, I know, we're sick, but we're men, what can we do? And then best, huh? Yeah, when I show this to guys, they go, nah, I said, okay, think about it. If right now you had a choice, you could either have Whoopi, you know, make Whoopi, or have your video games. That's it. You got to make a choice forever. Think about it. How much time do you spend making Whoopi? How much time do you spend playing video games? And they go, yeah. I said, don't worry. Eventually the video games will make Whoopi for you. It's coming, folks. Why? Because the technology will make it available and people will pay for it. And I think about what we baby boomers had to do. We had to steal our father's Playboy. And yet the millennials up in their room on their high-speed internet, personal laptop or tablet, just click, click, tap, tap. Ooh, what are they? Ooh, that's interesting. Anyway, that's what's changed, folks. The world has changed and will continue to change at a tremendous rate, and I'm excited. But there'll be problems, too, as I said. I'm repeating myself. My apologies. Slide number 16. What economic factors are influences on personal financial planning? Well, you have many items that we hear about in the news. And if you take economics, you're going to learn more about these. The market forces, supply and demand, supply and demand. That's what happens when you teach a parrot how to say the supply and demand, you get a learned economist. Remember, I told you we're going to insult everybody. Production costs and competition, financial institutions, the influence of the Federal Reserve Bank and the other central bankers, as they're called, the global financial markets, the level of exports and imports, and various economic conditions such as slide number 17, consumer prices and inflation, consumer spending, interest rates, money supply, unemployment, housing starts, gross domestic product. Gross, what does that mean? In other words, how many goods and services does each country, each economy produce? The trade balance or imbalance, the budget deficit, which people are so worried about, but nobody really wants to fix except when they're out of power, then they say, we're going to fix it. But when they get in power, they make it worse. And then the financial markets. But does any of us have really that much control over these matters? Really? If you talk to a drop of water and said, hey, drop of water, are you responsible for that flood over there? The drop of water would say, hey, what are you talking about? I'm a drop of water. How can I be responsible for the flood. Well, all of us are responsible for these, but we have a tiny little bit of influence because we are just a tiny part of an $18 trillion in the United States economy and a, what, $70 trillion economy outside, totally in the world economy. But, this is the cool part. As we learn how to better handle our finances, as that single tiny little drop of water, we make the flood a better thing. If that makes any sense, I don't know if that analogy holds well. But the fact that we do a good job with our finances helps the global economy in very real ways. Now, tiny, tiny, tiny. But the more of us that do this, indeed, you're starting to get the picture, huh? So we're going to focus on the things that we can and do have control over, and by doing that, we're going to make all these larger, sometimes called macroeconomic, conditions better. Because here it is, folks. Here is our class. This is our class, folks. A little preview. In chapters 1 and 2, we discuss planning. We're going to learn how to set goals, right? Because we have to write them down and make them reality and learn about what is available to us. What kind of long-term goal can you put in your mind and then put into action and then realize over the many years that you will be working and contributing to our economy? And then in chapter 2, we learn how to find where those resources are by analyzing where we are. We sometimes use the word budgeting, but nobody likes to use that word. We'll call it money management and cash flow. And then chapter 3, we discuss everybody's favorite topic to hate, and that's taxes. Saving, chapter 4, banking and checking. Borrowing, credit, chapter 5. Spending, chapters 6 and 7, consumerism, home buying. And then we spend a week and a half or so on 2 weeks on managing risk, insurance, the necessary evil, chapters 8, 9, and 10. And then my favorite part of the semester is investing, chapters 11, 12, 13. And we will end with retirement and estate planning, the final chapter of our class and life. So are you excited? I hope so. I hope so, because this stuff can make you very wealthy, folks. In our next presentation, you don't want to miss our next presentation, because we are going to learn how to create goals, and we're also going to learn how those goals can make us very wealthy by learning about the future value of money. And if we have a consistent, prudent approach to long-term financial management and investing, and the world doesn't end, we should do very well. So, again, I want to thank you all for being in our class and remind you how honored and privileged, grateful, happy we all of us at Southwestern are that you are here. And we will see you again in our next presentation on goal setting and the time value, future value of money. See ya!